started. We're going to be picking up where we left off last time in James chapter 4, and the hope is we're going to finish chapter 4 tonight, and over the next few class periods we're going to finish up chapter 5 as well. And so what we're going to be doing with this section here is just trying to hit the main points as best we can, but also if we can get into some discussions and things of that nature, we're definitely going to try to make time for that as well. So we're picking up in verse 11 of chapter 4. And if someone could go ahead and read verses 11 and 12 of chapter 4.
Speak not evil one of another, brother. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judges another?
All right, so we have been talking about what the major situation was that James is addressing, and the main issue that he's been trying to deal with these people is this selfish attitude, this me-centric religion that they were really trying to promote for themselves, whether it be trying to promote their own lust even in their prayer life, or whether it be fighting with others to make sure they got their way. And then he transitions from that particular thought into dealing with how God views these things, and now he adds another subcategory to it. He's really trying to emphasize this point, and why do you think it would be the case that James is so adamant about addressing all of these issues? I mean, surely he could just say in a few words, be kind to one another, and that would be enough, right? Why does he have to go into each of these specific situations and really delve into them? Any thoughts?
I guess it just helps to flesh it out, deal with the specific issues that they're dealing with.
Absolutely. For those who couldn't hear, Casey was saying it's an attitude where we can really flush out the ideas so that we can really address what's going on. True or false? A preacher can get up in a pulpit every Sunday and say, we need to focus on God first in our lives and no one's going to bat an eye. Probably true. Or a preacher could get up in a pulpit and say, you know, we need to be good, godly, moral people. No one's going to have a problem, right? But what happens when the preacher says, lying has to stop? Or a preacher gets up in the pulpit and says, gossip is unacceptable? You have a different situation now, right? That's what James is doing. He said, it's not enough just for me to come out and say, you need to be good, moral, godly people, or you really need to help take care of each other. These are specific things that need to be addressed. Because there are problems that you specifically are either starting to have or have had for a while. So he's really trying to drive these points home to make sure that these people understand the seriousness of what they're doing. And the seriousness of where this can lead. He says, do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. What does that mean? Why would he word it that way? What's he trying to get at here? Speaks evil of his brother. What does that mean? We'll start with that one. What does it mean to speak evil of your brother?
Anger.
What was that?
Slander.
Slander, that's definitely one part of it. What else might be involved in this?
Gossip,
slander. So we have some things that might be true but shouldn't be told, some things that are not true. What else might be the case here?
Maybe the strife or envy, jealousy.
Strife, envy, jealousy, which could lead itself to maybe complaining. When we go to the Old Testament, and we see the children of Israel, what is one of the things that God repeatedly condemns them for doing?
Complaining,
bickering, talking about Moses, talking about Aaron, talking about the leadership. We should just go back to Egypt because at least we had onions there.
He used the term stiff neck.
Stiff neck. That phrase has been used so often. You hear it in the book of Acts as well when Even Stephen made that statement in Acts chapter 7. He stands before the leaders of Israel, or Judea at this time, the religious leaders, and he calls them stiff-necked and uncircumcised in ear and in heart. Imagine if a preacher said that today. You think that would go over well? Just with an audience of Christians? Think about that in reference to religious leaders who are already having enough of the Christians. And he called them stiff-necked and uncircumcised. He says, you're better off as a Gentile. But why was he doing this? Why was he responding that way? Because they heard their whole history and they still weren't listening. They heard everything there was to know about the Messiah. They were supposed to memorize the old law. They were supposed to know who this man was. They were supposed to be religious leaders helping people to grow closer to God. And instead, what did they do?
Pockets and laid a foundation for their rule for many years to come. Stiff-necked. But what he's really trying to get at here is, as Christians, our words have meaning. What we say is very powerful. Remember in James chapter 3, just our previous chapter, we talked about the power of the tongue. And remember how James describes it, how great a fire a little spark kindleth? The tongue is a powerful tool for good or for evil. And the reality is, what we are seeing take place here is these people are allowing their tongues to run loose about their brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, let's not miss a point here. Today, we like to trust our brothers and sisters in Christ, right? That's something that we enjoy having the ability to do. We say, oh, well, we're all trying to work towards the same goal, and so I love to trust my brethren. I mean, it's a blessing to be able to dwell together in unity. In the first century, these people were doing more than just trusting each other for convenience or for comfort. These people were putting their lives in each other's hands. What would happen if one of these Christians left the faith and went back to Judaism and reported a congregation? What happened if these people heard some of these preachers that were coming in and they became angry about what was said and they turned them into the Roman government? That would have been it. So when we're seeing James address this, these people were being persecuted. These people had been driven from their homes. Things that we would say today are necessities, really, for having this camaraderie or this real companionship is really going through hardships together. You would think these people would be the closest of companions, and they were still having trouble with this. They were having trouble with complaining, with bickering, with fighting, with backbiting, with gossip, with slander. James is trying to address this because it is this serious. But he takes it a step further as well. Notice what he said next. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. Now here's where a lot of people like to jump on this. And they say, ha, see, we're not supposed to judge. We're not supposed to judge at all. Well, we can go to the book of Matthew in chapter 7, verse 1. He says, judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you're going to be judged. Slightly paraphrasing, of course. But what's he saying with that? The judgment that we use is what we will be judged by. He goes on a little bit further in chapter 7 to describe using righteous judgment. Now, does this mean that I can go out as an individual and publicly shoot someone in town and people can't judge me because you don't know my heart? No, you committed a crime. I can judge that. It was right in front of everyone's eyes. So what are we talking about here?
You spent a lot of time with this about being a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we shouldn't be, we should get the... It says get the beam out of our own eye. And so, I think that's where he's going with it.
Well, it definitely has an aspect of hypocrisy involved in that, because what we're seeing is, if I'm going to look at myself first and see that I have sin, am I going to be as quick to attack someone else? if I'm understanding that there's a struggle with sin that I've had to deal with, I'm not going to be as quick to want to beat someone else over the head. And instead, I would rather try to show them what's right and what's wrong. But we can go a little bit further with this, because what we're noticing is a judgment that only God can use. How many of you have heard the statement, once a fill-in-the-blank, always a fill-in-the-blank? Is that a true statement in any context? Nope, because I could say, once a liar, always a liar, but Paul said in 1 Corinthians, such were some of you. I could say, once a loose person, always a loose person, but Rahab was in the lineage of Jesus. People are not just standardized things. We are people who are capable of change. In literature class, we had a study of dynamic versus static characters. A static character is someone who at the beginning of the story is one way, and at the end of the story, they're the exact same way. A dynamic character is someone who, over the course of the story, they learn, they grow, they change, they adapt to their situation. At the end, they're stronger in their world than they were at the first. So in this situation here, I don't have the right to judge someone's heart for things I can't see. Now, how might this show itself in our world today? How might I see this? And let's go ahead and try to give some examples. Maybe this can help illustrate this point a little bit. How might this show itself in our daily life?
Actions always speak louder than words.
Actions speak louder than words, absolutely. But what about situations where I don't know what's going on? Here might be a good example for us. You're in traffic. Someone cuts you off speeding like a madman down the road. What's your first thought? Anger, frustration. What on earth is wrong with you? But maybe that person was rushing to the hospital. Or maybe that person had just gotten out of seeing their family member pass away. I can't judge their intent. That is something I don't have the ability to judge, ever. Here's one example that I heard of. And it was one that really stuck out to me. This was a member of the Lord's church who said this. If they were a real Christian, they wouldn't be on the front row every Sunday. Friends, that's not an uncommon view. That is not something that Christians are completely foreign to.
It should be the exact opposite. Because and just take for instance, we have a lot of kids and a lot of teenagers. Mm-hmm. And if they never see anybody go up front, they're automatically going to say, well, what's the point of going up front?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for those who couldn't hear, Andy was talking about how you would think it would be the exact opposite. If someone's up front, you would say, well, that looks like someone who's trying. But here's the reality here. What's the motivation behind the person making the statement? What is their focus and their attitude? Their attitude is, I'm going to look at the negative of what just happened instead of the positive. Instead of saying, oh, this person is trying to make something right here, they say, oh, well, they'll do it again tomorrow. And you know the sad part? They're probably right, but who's going to help the person avoid it next time? Do we think that sin is something we can just turn off on a dime? How often did Paul say he wished he could go back into Judaism? The Apostle Paul said he missed how things used to be. And we say, well, but Paul, you were killing Christians. But Paul, you know the truth now. And Paul says, yeah. And I've been stoned. I've been beaten. I've been shipwrecked. I've been thrown in prison. I've been attacked by people. I've been run out of cities. I've been hated everywhere I've gone. I've been chased down, ridiculed, lied about. It was nice to be a little bit respected before. In fact, that didn't even just come from the world or from the Jews or the Romans. No, that came from Christians. We read about that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. They had people coming in and trying to discredit his apostleship. Friends, this kind of stuff has long-lasting effects. We mentioned this a while back, how in the first century, it took very little time for denominationalism to start popping up. It took very little time for people to leave the faith. And as Christians, our number one job is what? What is our number one job?
To be faithful, to trust in God.
To be faithful and trust in God. What is our second most important job? What was that?
Love your brothers.
Love your brothers, teach, help others do the same. Number one, number two. These characteristics, what part of our job does that allow us to do? Speaking evil of brethren, gossiping, backbiting, what do any of those things help us to do for the Lord? Nothing. In fact, it draws us farther away. So what is my job in all of this? What is my response supposed to be? He says, don't speak evil, but what am I supposed to do when things pop up? Well, that's how we go down a little bit further. He says, but if you judge the law, again, he's saying if you're judging your brethren, you're judging the whole law. Remember in James chapter 2, if we violate one aspect of the law, we violate the whole law. Similar idea that's taking place here. He says, but if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. How many people in our own society are happy obeying the law? Let me ask this. Do you hear more often, I'm really glad that we have some of the laws that we have because it allows us to be more free and allows us to be more safe, at least. Not all of them, don't get me wrong. But some of them, at least, that allow us to be safer. Okay? Now, how often on the other side do we hear, you know, if I was there, I would make this decision. If I was doing this, things would be different. No, you would just be a tyrant on the other end. That's the irony of these things. We have far more people who want to judge the law and say why it's unjust. A cop pulls them over and they say, the police department is corrupt. You are going 85 and a 60. We have far more people who want to judge the law, and it's no different when it comes to Christianity. We try to be God's PR department. We try to say, oh, well, you know, we're going to walk back some statements that God made because they were a little bit insensitive. No. Friends, God said what he said because he's being serious. Not because he wants to hurt people, not because he wants to attack people, because he doesn't want them going to hell. And in these situations here, he's saying this because this is not only going to hurt you as an individual, it will hurt the other people that are around you as well. So he says this going forward. He says, there is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy, but who are you to judge your neighbor? The simplest word we can look at with this section is not judgment, but prejudgment, prejudice. What's happening here is these are people who are claiming, who are talking evil of someone, but attacking their intentions and their heart. No, we don't know each other's heart. We don't know our intentions behind things. People are going to make mistakes. People are going to sin. But when I see a Christian who does something inappropriate, or I see a Christian who does something that is sinful, or something that is wrong, is my first thought about them, well, those low-down, dirty people, or is my first thought, what's going on here? They're a Christian. They're supposed to be trying to do what's right. So something's obviously wrong here. We have a lot of people throwing around the arguments today of Matthew 18, go to Matthew 18. And that's their go-to statement for when a preacher gets up and says something wrong or an elder gets up and says something that is wrong. We're not talking about a situation where you have said something publicly. Yes, that motivation might be different, and we should try to talk to those people. We should try to help those people if they're wrong. Now, if they don't listen to us, that's not on us. But when it comes to the individuals when it comes down to the everyday Christian, if you will, our motivation should be first and foremost, bring them back. It's easy. It is very easy to cut people off. We act like that's the hardest thing to do. It's really not. It's really not. Because to stick by people is difficult. To try to help people is difficult. To try to stand by and show them the way, that is painful. I heard a preacher on one occasion say, trying to help Christians to stay faithful is like trying to potty train a puppy. He said, every time you try to convince them, they'll go do something else. He said, and it is stressful. But when it works, it's great. It's great. What is our motivation behind this? What is our goal? Those who speak evil, he's lumping them in with the same group of people who were focused on who? What was the focus of chapter 4, verses 1 through 5? Self. He says the people who are doing this, the people who are going about this way, they're the ones who are focused on self. They're the ones who don't see God as the one who's in charge. Because what I can say is, no, I can't judge men on this earth. I can't pass condemnation on you. I can only speak as God spoke. Even the archangel Michael, when contending with the devil, what did he say? The Lord rebuke you. Even an archangel didn't have the right to pass that kind of judgment. Now, what's the difference in passing judgment of that sort and being judgmental? What is the difference here? What are we looking at? I can look at the law, the Word of God. I can look at your actions and I can say this is wrong. What I can't do is say you violated the law, therefore I am condemning you. I can't do that. I can't pass that kind of judgment. I can say you need to change or else God will judge. God does not look kindly on what you're doing. But it's not about what I say. It's not about how I feel about things. Are there any questions or comments before we move on to the next section here? All right. Let's go ahead and read verses 13 through 17. Whoever gets there first, please.
Go do now. Ye that say, tomorrow, today or tomorrow, we will go into the city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or do that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin.
All right, so what is James trying to address in this section? If you were to just break it down into one word, what would you think? Okay, all you have is the present to act, to live, and those kind of things. What'd you say? Boasting. Those are both big parts of this. And really, it can be summed up in one big overall characteristic of worldliness. What are they focused on? Right here. They're saying, today or tomorrow, I will go into such a city, and I'll buy and sell and get gain, and all these kinds of things. What is that? What are they doing? They're making plans. Bingo. Bingo. They're leaving God out of their plans. There are many, many Christians who will go about and they will say, well, I can't do this for God because, well, I've got this job I've got to do. Or I can't do that. I can't show up for this because, you know, we have a ball game. You know, we got everything booked. I can't help with this because we're booked out throughout the year. We got to go do all these different things. If I'm too busy for God, how busy am I? Too busy. Because the reality is we do make time for the things we want to do. We do. And people say, no, you don't understand the job that I have. No. We make time for the things we want to do. If you want that 30-minute power nap, you're going to make time for that 30-minute power nap. It'll happen. If I want to go and do this trip, I'm going to block out sections of my year. I'm going to work harder on these days to make sure I've got that time set aside. These people, what they're doing is they're going about and they're saying, we're going to do all these different things. And what does James say? Yet you do not know what tomorrow holds. Friends, we don't know if America's going to be here tomorrow. We don't know if our jobs are going to be here tomorrow. We don't know if our homes are going to be safe tomorrow. We don't know anything about tomorrow. But what do we know about our job as Christians tomorrow? We have to be ready. If the Lord comes back, then we're going home. If the Lord delays His coming, it doesn't matter what happens here. Our job stays the same. Is there ever going to be a time where there's not a need for evangelism? Is there ever going to come a time when there's not a need for godly living? No. Is there a time where the job that we're doing is no longer needed? I heard and this is more of a funny thing, I guess, with this, but I heard someone say that the first job that's likely going to be replaced by AI is stand-up comedy. Because they already had an AI who got a guy, I think he was from the 1960s, they took his voice and his recordings, and they can have AI write a whole skit for this guy. He's dead. He's been dead years. There might come a time where my job is obsolete. And friends, there might come a time when preaching is not a career anymore. There might come a time when we're not allowed to have buildings anymore. I have a friend of mine. He does evangelistic work in Europe. He was in Switzerland. They're not allowed to open the windows when they're singing because if they reach a certain level, the cops are going to come in and shut that place down. Up in northern India, they have constant raids on Christian villages up there from the Pakistanis. Friends, we don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what our life is going to be like. But what we do know is that God's in charge no matter what. What we do know is if I'm living faithfully to God, if I've done what God has asked of me to do, I will have a home in heaven. It's a promise that was made. And notice what he says. Instead, in contrast to what was just described, ye ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will do this or do that. Now, here's the question. It's pretty common still around here for people to say, Lord willing, we're going to do this or this. Is that what's being talked about here necessarily? There's a good thought behind that. Don't get me wrong. But what's really being referred to here is I'm acting, I'm making my plans based on what God would want, based on how God wants me to live. See, we look at it as more, well, if the Lord lets me live till tomorrow, these are the plans I'm going to have. But what I should be thinking is, should I be doing this? Should I be making this plan? Is this something God wants me to do? I'm not saying the things that we go about doing that are our vacations and our trips and our things are bad things. Don't get me wrong. But what I am saying, if those things take me away from God, if those things separate me from what I'm supposed to be doing, if I have an opportunity to study the Bible with someone on vacation, should I do it? Yeah, I'm on vacation from my job, but I'm not on vacation from Christianity. See, here's the funny thing for some people, and y'all are lucky. When y'all go on vacation, your job isn't the church. I'm still working every time I go on a trip somewhere. But really, should it be any different for me or you? I'm fortunate that I get to preach the gospel. I'm fortunate that my whole career gets to be geared around trying to help the church. But friends, there's things you can do I can never do. You will talk to people I may never talk to. Or the elders might never talk to. You have access to so many things. If we go look at the early church in Acts chapter 2 all the way to the end of the book of Acts, who was doing most of the evangelistic work? Was it the apostles? They did a lot of it. But the vast majority was people who were talking to their neighbors, talking to their family, carrying back what they heard. They say, hey, you need to come hear this. How many missionaries went to Ethiopia? The eunuch. Likely later on in history, more people went, but he was it. At that point, that was it. One man going back home. How would you feel if you were the only American Christian? It's your job to go convert everybody. You say, I'd have a hard time with Tennessee, much less the rest of the country. But friends, what are my plans? What decision am I going to make? How am I going to live my life? Because God says through the pen of James, verse 16, as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. He's saying, as you are right now, you are boasting in yourself. Your focus is about yourself. And that is evil. Friends, there are evil people in the world. The reality is they may not be the ones you think they are. Because sometimes the most evil person is when we look in the mirror. Depending on how I live my life, depending on how I'm going to do things. Remember in James chapter 1, he says that the men who are hearers of the word, not doers, they're like the man who beholds his natural face in a glass, who when he sees who he is, he goes his way and what? Forgets what manner of man he was. Remember the Pharisee and the publican, the parable that Jesus taught. What did it say about the audience that Jesus was talking to? It was those who had convinced themselves that they were righteous. And then verse 17 says, so whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. Well, we did it. We got through chapter 4. We might hit that last verse a little bit next time. But next week we're going to pick up with chapter 5. Thank you so much for your attention, and you're dismissed.